Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the United Malt Group Limited Full Year Results Conference Call. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Mark Palmerquest, Managing Director and CEO, and Ms. Amy Spannick, CFO. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Appreciate you joining us on our call of our first full year reporting. It's been a pretty amazing period of time standing up United Malt as its own separate public company and doing it all at the time when COVID came on as we started our company on the 23rd of March. I'd like to start just quickly with a quick executive summary, four major areas. Obvious one is certainly COVID has had an impact on the business, but we're very pleased with the safety levels that we're able to maintain for ourselves, our customers, and our suppliers, running our business differently, but making sure that safety was paramount for us as we went. Despite the fact of COVID, our business model continues to be very resilient. We have benefited, and so our customers have as well, in that we've got a diverse set of facilities and assets, a diverse customer base, and a lot of different products that we're able to help our customers out, be very agile in terms of what we did to be able to meet their needs and also maintain good financial strength in the organization. Our balance sheet and cash flows are in very good shape despite what we've been experiencing with COVID. With the preemptive capital raise that we had back in May, certainly strengthened the balance sheet and puts us in a nice position to be able to ride through these adverse times and continue to take a look at places where we can really continue to focus on our strategy. And we've been able to do a number of items through this period of time, and I'll run through those a little bit later, but we have announced most of those in previous communications. So going to the next page, just a summary of results. Our EBITDA was down to $156 million, and that's a Pulse AASB16 number. We certainly got negatively impacted in the second half of FY20, coming off of a really nice start in the first half of FY20. We experienced lower volumes in terms of production, as well as through our warehouse distribution, and we saw a change in the product mix as we went through it. We certainly incurred some higher corporate costs, but some of those were anticipated as we knew the different type of functions that we needed to add on to stand us up as a separately listed entity, but we're also a little bit surprised in the higher level of insurance costs that we've had to incur as well. So our board decided that it was prudent to declare a final dividend of 3.9 cents. This represents a payout of 40% of our NPAT, which is below the payout ratio that our board has targeted as a policy at approximately 60%. But it just reflects, we think, being prudent because we still have some uncertainty of COVID and the impact that it's going to have on our organization. Balance sheet, as I said, is in good shape. We ended up with a ratio, and Amy Spannick will go through this a little bit later, but our net debt to underlying EBITDA at 1.7, which is slightly outside of the range that our board has set at 2.0 to 2.5. But we did experience the typical seasonal working capital drawdown that we experience in just a normal seasonal type of rotation in our business. That will certainly pick up as we're getting into the new crop and buying new supplies of barley, but we anticipate that we will be within that range when we get to the end of the first half. And our cash flows remain positive, which is just a good reflection in terms of how we've been able to adjust to the business. And it's also a good reflection on the resiliency of our customers as they've had to adapt to the changes that are going on in the marketplace. Moving to the next slide, I just want to touch on one of our highest priorities that we have inside of our organization, and that's safety for us as an organization. Our recordable injury frequency rate is down to 1.45, and we're very pleased with that. But there's a lot of effort that was put in behind that. Our leaders are very intentional and really increased the engagement on a daily basis at all of our plants, our facilities, both from processing side and the warehouse distribution. That works out to an absolute number of 16 people that were injured inside the company for the year. A number that we just have to keep working on because, again, each one of them is an individual, and we just are very, very concerned about making that number get lower and lower as we go forward every year. Our lost time injury rate slightly went up from our last year lowest level to 3.63 number. Next thing that's really important to us, and that's our commitment to operating a sustainable business. So now I'm on slide six. And I would encourage you to take a look at our inaugural sustainability report, which you will find on our website. We spent a lot of time focusing on developing our sustainability strategy. We're receiving a lot of input from both internal and external stakeholders, and we're identifying and assessing the key risks and the opportunities that we have inside of our sustainability program. Just wanted to call out one aspect is that we understand that we have to play our part in reducing our environmental impact in our operations. We use a lot of sources of energy. We look to reduce our emissions. We're a big user of water, and so we're looking for efficiencies we'd gain on that. Another part of this is promoting a diverse and inclusive workplace. It's very important to us, developing it through culture, support of our policies, but we have found that it helps our decision-making and helps the whole culture in our company and having a very diverse and inclusive workforce. So our ESG strategy remains very focused, even through COVID. Continuing to work on our health and safety of our workforce, making sure that we're maintaining good supplier relationships, that we're prompt on payments, helping them out, and making sure that we have a stable supply chain in place and that we remain financially prudent. The next three slides, I'm just going to address COVID at a more deeper type of level. So I think first, I'll just go through and talk about the impact a little bit. So some of the things that have come through this, and again, coming into this in the middle of March and then riding through a pretty good dip as the market was dealing with the major restrictions going on in March and April, we did see a pretty good drop in terms of what our business was. But the one thing we found is good resilience in the marketplace. Our consumers were still looking for ways to be able to gain supplies, both in beers and as well as the distilled spirits. And so the big shift was the restrictions going on on-premise consumption and changing the market channel and distribution channel into off-premise type of supply where that demand base was very, very strong. This is something that we could see readily by the larger beer companies that already had well-established packaging capacity and capabilities and also had very good distribution, that they were able to make that shift in a pretty prompt fashion, not enough to totally offset the on-premise consumption, but certainly respond to the needs of the customer, the consumer out there to work on the beer. For our craft guys who are mainly looking at on-premise type of consumption, they've had to be very innovative and adapt themselves, increasing packaging, finding ways to provide a pickup or takeaway type of marketing or supply channel, and also delivering to consumers on a direct base. And we've seen that improve throughout the past 6 months. And we've seen a nice recovery, not a full recovery, but a nice recovery in terms of that taking place. It has altered our customers in terms of their ordering patterns. Two things that we have seen that's come out of this is, one is they're ordering a lot less on orders, but they're ordering basically twice as often. And it's a good reflection, again, of how they're adapting to what's going on in the marketplace. They're trying to find ways to be more efficient in their working capital, not carry as much inventory, but also be responsive to when demand picks up in different regions. And so we've had to respond to that and be very agile to have a more just-in-time type of supply form to come forward. The other thing that we've seen is they also are realizing that for them to make it more efficient, is they have pulled back on the amount of different varieties of beers that they're producing. That allows them to carry different components of inventory. It allows them to shift into the off-premise consumption, that it doesn't make their distribution very complex and certainly helps them from a packaging aspect. So it's been very interesting to watch how they have adapted to work through this, preserving capital, responding to the change in terms of how they support their customers in the marketplace, and also finding ways that they can operate differently. We believe some of these changes will actually go forward even after we work through the whole restrictions aspect of it. So the next page, we start looking at this, is really what's been our response. Well, the first and foremost thing that's been out there is making sure that we are meeting the needs of health and safety for our people, our customers, and our suppliers. And in order to get that accomplished, we've had to operate our plants differently. We have gone through a process of where we split our shifts or we stagger our shifts so that we are able to protect our people as much as we can and make sure that we can continue to operate our assets even if there are people that we are having to quarantine because they may have had some exposure. And that whole process, we have dramatically enhanced our hygiene measures. We clean between shifts. We're following social distancing on all of our sites, and we're making sure that we have the full use of PPE that is necessary to try to keep them all safe. For our staff that's not working in the facilities, we have definitely gone through a work-at-home process. For us as an organization and being a global company, we had a lot of those capabilities in place just to be able to communicate as a company globally. But we have greatly enhanced that, making sure that our office staff has the capabilities that they need to be able to operate from at home. We've been working closely with our customers and our suppliers, trying to deal with this aspect of startup, slow down, speed back up again. So disruptions going on in supply chains, making sure that we have supplies in place. And as I mentioned before, our biggest attribute that we can do for our customers is having that agility and that flexibility so we can respond to their needs so that they can support their market in the best manner they can, but do it very efficiently for them on a cost base as well. We'll continue to operate as we need to operate in each one of the regions that we go into. And if I just turn on to the next page, so our plan ahead is quite honestly a lot of continuation in terms of what we're doing. We all of us still have uncertainty in terms of how long restrictions will remain in place. We're certainly encouraged by some of the initial results with the vaccines, but again, that will take a long time to get distributed through. And so we need to keep responding to what our customer needs are and making sure we're setting our operations to be able to be adaptable and have that agility that we need to have on a go-forward basis. The outcome for us is that we're learning different ways to adapt our business. And so even coming through COVID, a lot of it will go back to what we'll call kind of normal operating kind of procedures. But we are finding a lot of things coming through that is creating some ways for us to look differently at our business. We absolutely believe that our customers will change as well as they come through this process. And so our big focus will be making sure that we're evolving our company and how we operate and how we serve our customer as they evolve as we go through COVID, but as well as we come out of it and get back to a better situation. So turning to the next page, I just want to talk about executing our strategy. One thing that we feel very confident about is that the strategy that we have set and that we have been focusing on before we even got into COVID is still very pertinent on a go-forward basis. And the three major areas that we concentrate on is optimizing our core, transform for tomorrow. As I mentioned, we think our customers are actually changing. And then the other component is creating value. And as I go through those different areas, we are doing those things. So optimizing the core, that's what the expansion at Arbroath, Inverness is about. It's adding capacity. It's reducing our cost structure. Expanding our distribution and craft, that's what our Mexican expansion on our existing distribution agreement is about, trying to maintain and keep our access into our, despite the fact that we've had.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have temporarily lost connection with the speaker line. Please continue to hold and the conference will recommence shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for holding. The conference will now recommence.
Sorry about that. Having a little technical issues keeping a phone line open. I'm not sure where I lost you. So I think I'll just go back and just mention strategy here, even if I'm repeating a little bit. I'm on page 10. And again, our focus is on the three areas of strategy. It's optimizing the core, it's transform for tomorrow, and it's creating new value. And just walking around a little bit, some of the projects that we're able to continue to work on through COVID does that for us. So the aspects of really improving our performance in the distilling market, where our expansion at Arbroath and Inverness is certainly on track to be able to help us with that. The expansion of our craft distribution aspects with what we've done in Mexico and what we're doing in Asia, despite the fact that we've got container disruption, we're certainly working on that. Transforming for tomorrow, one of the big issues for us is really enhancing and embracing technology. And so we've got transportation management system that will start up early December. We've been expanding our usage in our CRM, which is our customer relationship management systems. And we're looking at our ERPs, our enterprise resource planning systems, and being able to use the data in a much better manner for us. We can really help our customers out, improve the ease of business, predictive in terms of what we can do in terms of assets and inventories. Looking at the other area of transform is the Perth expansion that we did that's really improving our assets, and we'll continue to look for areas that we can either enhance the efficiencies or help out on the capabilities. And then in terms of looking at creating new value, it's really looking at possible acquisitions, but we would look for adjacent acquisitions that tie in well with our customers and also do a lot for us in terms of gaining some growth and adding some value. So with that, I'm going to hand this over to Amy Spanik, who is our CFO, and she'll take you through FY20 performance. Amy?
Thank you, Mark. So I'm on slide 12 for those following along. We had a strong first half, but unfortunately, as Mark has indicated, we're negatively impacted by COVID in the second half, which resulted in our revenue decreasing by about 2.1%. We also experienced increased corporate costs that were reflecting the costs that we needed to do to set up the demerged public company, but also we experienced the hardening of the markets, particularly around the D&O, which was above expectation and what had been previously presented in our scheme document. But we were also able to take some actions and remove about 5.9 million of costs out of our business in the second half in response to what we were seeing with the reduced volumes due to COVID. And we also were able to take advantage of about 4.4 million of government wage retention programs to help reduce the furlough impacts and costs that we would have otherwise recognized. And just for note, we actually did not receive any assistance in Australia or in the United States. As we go on to the next page, which has the earnings waterfall on it, you can see what was making up the variance as we go from FY19 into FY20. The first and most obvious one, which will be noise we will not have to experience next year, is that impact of the AASB 16. So you'll see in various points throughout this presentation where the 12.6 is having an impact. We also had talked before and the half-year results about the 3.0 or the 3 million write-down that we had taken in the first half with hops that we have in our warehouse and distribution side. But the most empowering or powerful impact that we had on our earnings really was around COVID. You can see we've got identified here, broken out between both our processing and our warehouse and distribution, the impact that is due to both volume and mix that was related to those segments of our business. Mark also talked about the additional protocol that we had done around the hygiene and safety of our individuals. That split of shifts, the additional hygiene costs, and testing that we're having to do all had negative impacts on our earnings for the year. But you can also see, once again, where that positive piece, the reaction that we were able to have to reduce the costs in that second half and the uplift that we were able to receive from that. I've already talked a little bit about the corporate costs there and the impact that we have for insurance, but I like the last piece there, and that is that warehouse and distribution optimization. We had spoken before in our first half analysis and presentations around some of the initiatives that we were taking within our business in trying to make it more efficient. And we were actually able through the course of the year to recognize some positive returns, particularly around our freight optimization in the warehouse and distribution segment of the business, indicating in our waterfall that $3.8 million uplift. As I move on to the next page, what I want to highlight with regard to this is that these next two pages, so the processing, the warehouse, and distribution, are going to be on a pre-AASB 16 for ease of comparative. So you can see, as we have identified, particularly with the graph at the bottom, what was happening around our volumes as we were going through that first half. You could see we were going above that the 2019 volumes, but had a severe reduction as we were in those first few months of COVID and being able to come back to an almost normal cadence by the time we got to the end of our fiscal year. But over the course of that, we did have increased costs associated with the social distancing, with the splitting of shifts and the hygiene, as we have talked about before. And we did also experience some supply chain costs as we've had delayed containers both up in our Canadian locations and also experience, as you probably are aware, down in Australia as well. Those all had impacts on us that we're hoping we're going to be able to mitigate better in 2021 as some of those flows have opened back up again. On the warehouse and distribution side of the business, they were more heavily impacted with the COVID restriction and the stay-at-home orders that really started in about that March timeframe. Once again, you can see the dispatch presentation in seeing that that biggest element of the trough was in that April timeframe. Mark had spoken about the resilience and the creativity and the areas of initiative that the brewers were able to do to help come back out and get back to a more normal situation, which enabled us to get our inventory into their hands in order to be able to serve the end customer. We also saw that not only was there a lower volume, but there was a change in the product mix as well, and some of that had impact on the revenues that we had for the year. As we go to the next slide with our capital expenditures, you can see that we ended up just short of $60 million spent during the year, of which about half of that was related to our Scottish distilling. This is actually less than we had anticipated, and much of that was due to the construction shutdown that was required in the UK under government restrictions. The impact of that ended up having about $12 million of costs that we anticipated to spend around that Scottish distilling expansion to be pushed into next year. But overall, much of our business was able to continue with many of the planned projects that they had and were successfully able to complete them. As we go on to the balance sheet, I think the couple of items where I wanted to focus here is that it does remain strong. We did have our capital raise, as Mark mentioned, in the May timeframe, and we were able to use that to extinguish some debt and also some of our inventory financing. This was helpful in being able to reduce our net debt down to the $262 million and having that ratio be at that 1.7 that Mark had mentioned earlier. This is below the range, but it's also what we expect from a seasonality perspective at our end of year, and when we do get to our first covenant test back in the in March of 2021, we do expect to be back within the range of that 2 to 2.5%. The working capital that was very high from some of the people's perspective at that March timeframe did come back down into its more normal seasonal perspective, and that has mainly to do with the timing as our inventory comes in but is not necessarily paid for with the Northern Hemisphere crop. As we are going into the October beginning of the 2021 year, we do see that normal outflow of cash in order to pay the farmers. It gets us more in line with that net debt number that we've been discussing. We haven't seen much of a negative impact with regard to COVID-19 on either our receivables or our doubtful debts. We've worked closely with our customers in being able to help manage their inventory. Mark mentioned the cadence at which they are making purchases, and with those smaller balances, they're able to stay current on what is payable and owed to us. In the course of the last couple of months, we have been able to complete our annual refinancing of our inventory and working capital facilities, and we continue to have strong relationships with our banking partners. The last slide in my section is with regard to operating cash flow. We do remain to have positive cash flow on the operating section, and we also were able, as mentioned earlier, to pay down some of our inventory financing. We have broken out so that it is easier to understand some of the specific and unusual things that happened in the course of 2020. You can see that there is the AASB 16, and you can also see that there is a significant item that is due to the demerger and costs that we do not expect to incur again. And so with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Mark.
Thanks, Amy. I want to finish up before we get into questions. And I'm going to just talk a little bit about, a little bit deeper on what we're doing to execute our strategies, some of the outlook assumptions and market observations that we have. And then also just kind of the summarize at the end. But just starting with on page 20, just updating you on the Scottish distilling expansion. As Amy mentioned, we did experience a shutdown at Arbroath, which has put us behind what we had planned on, but we're back up and started construction back in August, obviously practicing a lot of the COVID issues with social distancing that we need to have as a result of the COVID restrictions. But we're well on track here that we're going to be commissioning the plant in early December, and we think we'll have it under full production capabilities in January 2021. Inverness didn't experience any delays at this point because construction actually was going to start in that August-September aspect. So piling is progressing well. It's almost done. Most of the equipment is on site or adjacent to site. So we don't have any issues worrying about Brexit restrictions coming in at the end of December. And the construction on the facilities themselves will start up in late November. We'll have most of the pad foundations poured. We're actually assembling some of the liquid tanks right now, and we expect to start on the kiln assembly there at the end of November. And so we are on track, as we had planned, for end of calendar year 2021. So strategic priorities on a go-forward basis, again, we're concentrating very hard in the warehouse distribution. Amy had showed you the improvements that we already were able to achieve in FY21. You know, the areas of expanding our craft distribution, I just highlight again that we have expanded our distribution agreement in Mexico. We expect to add two additional warehouses down there in the next 18 months. And we're really seeing this as a nice growth for us. Even though we've done a lot of business in Mexico, we think we can enhance the customer experience. We can improve our logistics, and we can certainly propel our brand in a much better level. The craft business in Mexico continues to grow at double digit, and we see that as a very nice runway for us for the next 5 years. As I mentioned before, just proactively using technology, we're just seeing so many things that we think that will enhance the customer experience, ease of doing business with us, and certainly have the ability to make us more efficient as we go forward. We're going to keep looking at places such as we're doing with Perth Kiln, which is adding a lot of safety and efficiency benefits, and primarily a reduction in consumption of energy, but also puts us well on a pathway to be able to look at expansion in that area, which is a very nice fit for the growing Asian markets to go forward. And I just wanted to call out the issue that we're experiencing here with developing innovative products and solutions. This whole hard seltzer marketplace has been an interesting development very fast inside of North America. We'll have to see just how that goes in places like Australia. But it's very additive to our warehouse distribution segment. We handle a lot of those products and move them through the marketplace, which is just another benefit to us as well as to our customers. So going on to page 22, just some of the market observations, and we've talked about these before, but I think it's good to take a look at it regionally because it just is so different in each one of the regions. As most of you know, we're starting to experience a pretty healthy second wave going on in North America, so we're seeing a combination of restrictions as well as some places opening up. And the big importance for us is just keeping a look at those restrictions, the impact on the on-premise channel. U.S. beer volume by on-premise is about 20% in consumption, but for the craft business, it's actually double that. It's closer to 40%. We've certainly benefited just being in the summer months. We've been able to add on a lot of outdoor capacity, do a lot of social distancing, and so that's worked out well for us. But now as we come in, Northern Hemisphere comes into the winter months, we'll have to see how creative they are in being able to heat and keep a lot of their outdoor capacity on stream. UK right now is going into a second wave. We've actually had some shutdowns that were announced, the firebreak lockdowns, which are in place until 2nd of December. We'll have to see if there's any extension on that. And that's in England and Scotland. There are tier three shutdown certain components regionally, basically a swath from Glasgow across to Edinburgh. But that is ready to start opening up again. In Australia, we're hoping that business will pick up there. We're seeing good demand on the domestic side, certainly coming into the summer months, seeing the great benefits of the lockdowns earlier. We're looking for a pretty good return on normality there. And then Asia, as I've mentioned before, is the demand is there, but it's been a struggle, quite honestly, in a lot of cases with the container disruptions and being able to get the product to them on a timely basis. So on to page 23, so some of the outlook assumptions that we have going on. COVID restrictions, we're making the assumption that despite the fact we've got some encouraging signs on vaccines, that a lot of those restrictions are gonna stay in place through a good portion of FY21, and in particular Northern Hemisphere, as we see what's happening. Volumes remain under what we were pre-COVID, and it depends upon the area. We're seeing, good growth coming back in some markets, restrictions in other markets. But until we take the restrictions off of the big social gatherings and return to kind of the big venue events, such as sporting events, concerts, and travel, we think it's going to take a while for it to work its way back to kind of a more normal situation. Going on to the next page and the final one for us, and then we'll take questions, is just kind of a summary of things. FY20 results, again, we're actually quite pleased with them. We think it really reflects just a really good performance and our agility and our ability to respond to customers, operate our operations, making them very adaptable, meeting our customer needs, and we've been working well together with all of our customers in that place. We remain profitable. We got cash flow, positive aspect through this whole process. We've got a very good, strong balance sheet that we've got confidence that we can withstand the duration of the COVID restrictions that are going on and any resulting weakness on a macroeconomic base that can be a result of COVID itself. And so we feel really good about being able to continue doing what we're doing going through FY21. So we think we're in a great place to, when everything returns back to growth, conditions stabilize. We've got a very strong market position. We have malt assets that are located very strategically. We've got a market-leading distribution platform, and we've got a customer base that is of high quality. It's very diversified by region, by product, and market. So we're able to withstand a lot of disruption that goes on in the marketplace because we do have that diversity that's in place. And we have the opportunity to keep looking at where we can make investments that helps us lower our production costs, enhance our efficiencies, and expand capacity where it makes sense, that we're able to do that and keep looking at that, working with our board, despite the fact we're having to deal with the COVID issues that are in front of us. So with that, I'd turn it over to questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you are on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from James Ferrier from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark and Amy. Thanks for your time today. First question, Mark, just if I can clarify one of the key assumptions you provided on page 26 of the presentation there, the assumption of no significant customer restocking occurring in FY21. Is that reflective of some conservatism on your behalf, or is that a view you have that there is no need for restocking, channel inventories are at the level they should be?
It's a great question. So it's a little bit of what we are hypothesizing as we're watching our customers. We're seeing the orders that they're buying from us appear to be tracking exactly what the demand is. So we think our customers have done a good job of trying to manage the inventories they have in place. And again, we've been responsive and adaptable, so we've been able to work them through that. Does that become something where they have learned to be able to operate with lower revenue or lower inventories? So will they go back and restock to levels that they did before pre-COVID? We're not sure that they will. And so it could be a little bit of conservatism on our part, but we do think this is one of the areas where our customers will evolve and that there will be a fundamental change. We've been able to prove out that we can meet their needs and be very adaptable. So we think that they would probably operate with lower levels of inventory than what they did before COVID.
Okay, that's very helpful color. Second question, and maybe one for Amy, and I'm referencing slide 13 here, for the most part at least. Just trying to get my head around sort of how you're treating some of the various cost lines for the business and post-demerger. So with the $14.9 million of standalone costs that was called out at the time of the demerger, how much of that has essentially been booked or expensed into the FY20 numbers?
So in the FY20 numbers, 6.5 of that 14.9 was, sorry, let me back that up there. 6.5 of the 14.9 was expected to be standalone corporate costs for the second half or for the full year of 2020. Mm-hmm. Of that 6.5, if half of it were to be recognized, it would have been roughly 3.25. Of that 3.25 of corporate standalone costs, so if you look to our segment breakdown, we actually recognized 4.5, and much of that was due to the hardening of the markets. The remaining amount of that was recognized in the allocations within our business. That 6.5, that is that standalone cost, is expected to go up to 12 million as we go into 2021, most significantly due to the D&O.
Yep, okay. And within the two segments, okay. The costs within that 14.9 million standalone that have been allocated into the segments, do those costs go up in FY21 as well, or are they sort of fully run rated in FY20?
In FY20, they stayed pretty close to what had been anticipated with a little bit of increase in insurance as we had broken out in those increased overhead costs.
Okay, great. So it's really just the increase at the corporate cost line up towards $12 million. That's the only material cost increase you're calling out into 21.
That is the majority of it, yes, correct.
Okay, great. And then can I, on a similar topic then, the $10 million of cost reduction that you guided to earlier in the year,
yes.
You've effectively got there with the 5.9 cost out and the $4.4 million of various subsidies. How much of that sticks into 21 and how much more is there to come beyond that?
We don't expect that any of the 4.4 will fall into the 2021 fiscal year, as many of the governments have not necessarily extended those opportunities. And with the return of much of our volume, we no longer qualify for being able to support or to receive those wage support schemes. Of the 5.9, some of that will continue, but not most of it, because there were temporary reductions to items such as board costs and salaries of employees. But we do expect that some will be able to continue to be out of our 2021 numbers because of the continued restrictions with regard to travel, which is one of the higher amounts that was identified aside from the personnel impact.
Okay, very helpful. Last one and a quick one. On that waterfall chart, $3.2 million FX gain. In the notes to the accounts, there's a $2.5 million net loss on FX derivatives. Can you just sort of join the dots there?
I sure can. So with derivatives, we do some mark-to-market for all of our derivatives that has some of it going into equity for effective hedge accounting, but some of it actually does go through the P&L. So that item is having to do with how those instruments are valued during the period. What is on this waterfall? This is the translation adjustment of what happens to our earnings that are in foreign currencies. And the bulk of that $3.2 million actually came in our first half when the USD and British sterling were stronger against the Aussie dollar. That weakened as we got into the second half.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much, Mark and Amy.
You're welcome. Thank you, James.
Thank you. Your next question is from David Pobucky from Macquarie Group. Please go ahead.
Hello, Mark and Amy. Congratulations on the results. First question, you mentioned you're currently at 90% of pre-COVID volumes, but it looks like processing volumes were flat in July to September, looking at that chart on slide 14, and warehouse and distribution dispatches have turned positive versus PCP. So is it the size of dispatches that are smaller? I think you mentioned that customers are ordering less on orders, but twice as often. Is that where the volumes are still below pre-COVID levels?
We're experiencing
yes,
it in two places. I'm sorry, Amy. We're experiencing it in two places. So you're identifying both of them. One is that we're on the processing business. We are not back to pre-COVID levels. And again, a lot of that has to do with the large venue type of demand that just isn't going to come back until we come out of the COVID situation, and quite honestly, customers get more comfortable being in large gatherings, so that's part of it. We've actually been pretty pleased with the craft side of the business as they've made the adjusts and have the innovations, but they too are still operating somewhat below the level. So it's a combination of the two, David, that is bringing it to our level. The part is presently we're operating at 90% of pre-COVID type of levels. We're just a little bit uncertain in terms of what's going to be the impact, Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere. Do we gain enough volume in Southern Hemisphere to offset what could be somewhat of a drop-off just because of the second, third waves that are coming through?
Great, thank you. And just picking up on the corporate costs, expecting an uplift to $12 million in FY21, do you expect some moderation in the following year?
We actually have not taken the time in the last 6 months in order to be able to internally look at those costs, as much of our focus was getting the team set up and standing up the company. We do have on our agenda for 2021 to look at those costs and see where it is that we can become more efficient as a group.
Okay, thank you. And just one last one from me, just in terms of consumption preferences, are you seeing any shift there? For example, have customers shifted to cheaper mainstream beer versus premium and craft, or are the latter two holding up?
It's a great question, David. So we think a lot of it really was forced by availability of supply. So we definitely saw a shift going over to the bigger brewers, the lagers, and a less consumption of craft. But again, we believe it's supply. As craft has been able to get into the off-premise and have more distribution, we have seen good uptake of the craft. So it's still a restrained supply issue. We don't see anything in front of us that tells us that there's a consumer preference change that's going on. So as the craft guys get more innovative, they get the opportunity to get more into off-premise side, we think we'll still see gains going on in the craft side. And obviously, if there's any relaxation of on-premise consumption, we think it will come right back. So we still have great confidence in terms of what we see and what the preference is by consumers.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thanks, Mark and Amy.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Thank you. Just a reminder, if we can please limit to two questions per person. Your next question is from Grant Saligari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Mark, Amy. So good to see the maiden result out of the market. First question, I just would like to clarify the volume indications that you've given relative to those charts on page 14 and 15. That comment around volume running at 90% of pre-COVID levels, can we actually interpret that as down 10% year on year, or are we talking about different metrics there?
Yes, that is exactly what we're saying, is that on a year-to-year basis, so while on some of these months it is looking as if we have returned to normal, on a yearly basis we are down 10%.
Okay, and so then come to your comments on northern versus southern hemisphere, sort of potential pickup southern, you know, issues continuing northern. I mean, given the geographic breakdown of revenue that you've given in the pack, it would seem sort of infeasible that southern hemisphere could offset sort of material impacts in the northern hemisphere. Interested in your comments on that.
Yeah, so Grant, the issue that is an uncertainty for us is a lot of the pickup that we've seen in Northern Hemisphere has been expansion of seating capacity by going outdoors. And so it's really helped a fair amount of that on-premise consumption to come back into the marketplace in Northern Hemisphere. The part that we don't know is how innovative are they going to be in order to be able to maintain that seating capacity. We've seen a lot of things going on in different regions and where they've added heating. They've done some enclosure, but it still qualifies as outdoor capacity. So we would anticipate the southern half of the U.S. is probably going to be very capable to be able to accomplish that. What you can do in the northern half of the U.S. and the western parts of Canada, that we'll just have to wait and see what it is. So we're not thinking that it's going to go down a lot in the northern hemisphere, but nevertheless, we still have to deal with the differences of weather. And the other big uncertainty to us is there going to be an impact just because of the regular influenza that gets intertwined with the COVID exposures. So that's that uncertainty that we have on that.
Okay, thank you. I think that's my two questions.
Thank you, Grant.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Richard Barwick from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Mark and Amy. I've got a question on the same topic because I'm still a bit confused by the language you're using. So if the 10% down for where you are currently in volume terms. Are you saying that, I understand that's a year-on-year comparison, but is that basically where you are, you know, say for the month of November or the last month, or are you saying that is a rolling 12-month volume comparison?
Yes, so what we have experienced and what has been presented here is that 10% down for the year of 2020. We are still seeing some reduction in our beginning months of 2021. So we are not back up to that 100% yet, but are still down in the 90%. So we have not returned back to that that pre-COVID level.
All right. So just to, again, be clear, the charts that you've shown on slide 14 and slide 15, so the daily dispatch charts, so effectively you're saying that those green lines have dipped down below zero back to, you know, circa 10%.
Yes. So there is a bit of an ebb and flow as we go through the various months. So that flat zero, yes, we'll have some. You can see that there have been elements where we have gone back up, particularly if you look at the warehouse and distribution, where it increased in June and then came down in July. There's a little bit of cadence there.
Yeah. Okay, that's understood. That sort of that variation, is that when the trend was obviously looking more positive, and if it's just, you know, weakened a fraction, is that a factor in why the payout ratio was only 40% as opposed to having the confidence to stick within the sort of the more standard guidance?
Yes, it was part of that consideration. You know, what we are not able to know for sure is where we are necessarily going to be as some of these second and third waves of the lockdowns in various geographies are still being seen. So until we are having more confidence with regard to where we're going to be able to have the world open back up again, potentially having a vaccine that is going to be able to be widely distributed, we are wanting to stay fairly prudent with regard to the expectations of the business going forward.
Okay, thank you. And then just the last one, maybe a little detail, but I was just interested to see the commentary on the warehousing distribution in terms of servicing the hard seltzer segment. I mean, that's a big growth segment in the US, so it's good that you guys can service the segment. Just wondering, what does that actually mean from a margin perspective? Is that a higher or a lower margin category for your business?
It's roughly the same because it's a distribution of a product. And so it's things like maltose, dextrose, its flavorings. It just fits in well in our distribution system because it's most of it is a baked product. It goes out by pallet loads, and it goes to a lot of our customers that are producing craft beer as well. So it's just a nice added product and slips into our distribution system very well and supports a nice existing customer base.
Okay, understood. Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Apoorv Sehgal from UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark and Amy. First question from me. There is some evidence that many large FMCG companies in the US have been building inventory ahead of a Northern Hemisphere winter and in anticipation of likely lockdowns and pantry stocking. Do you think that second half 20 revenues may be benefited from that in the fourth quarter?
We're not seeing signs of it from our side. We saw what I'd call a more established cadence in the last quarter of FY20. And so for us, we were seeing aspects of where it was generally going along with the consumption line. So we didn't see any big rebuild or restocking going on. There may be certain exceptions to that, but we did not experience that ourselves. And the cadence that we're going into the first quarter stills to be roughly the same. We may be experiencing a little bit of uptick, but we don't see that as a restocking issue at all. It may be just the off-premise consumption actually performed better than what they thought it would in the fourth quarter. And so we think it's just replenishing off of very low stock levels.
Okay, that makes sense. And just a final question from me, and apologies if this was asked, I might have missed it. But what happens to craft on-premise when winter commences and outdoor dining can't take place?
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's one of those uncertainties that we have. We're trying to see what they're doing. What we're seeing anecdotally is that, again, there's a lot of innovation going on. There's a lot of heating being added. There's some closure that's happening but still qualifies as outdoor capacity. So we'll just have to see what happens as it goes on. We think the southern portion of the U.S. is going to adapt very well, and we're seeing that happening now. When you get into the more northern regions where they experience more extremes in terms of cold and snow, we'll just have to see where they can go with that. So we're being, as we've mentioned, we think that COVID restrictions and the waves keep happening through a good portion of FY21. That's what we're making as our assumptions. And part of that is what happens to that outdoor capacity, how much of it actually gets replaced and how much of it gets lost during the winter months.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from John Campbell from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mark and Amy. Congratulations on a good result. Just two questions from me. Well, that's all that's allowed, obviously. But firstly, just around malt pricing, and I know this question's sort of in light of the fact I know you have some sort of term arrangements with your bigger customers around malt pricing and pass-throughs and the like. But are you observing any weakness in pricing when you're going to recontract any customers, given the sort of volume weakness that we've had in the past 6 months, or is pricing sort of holding in there?
Yeah, pricing seems to be holding pretty steady. A lot of it is really based on the fact that the people that we're supplying, we have some advantages from a location aspect and a supply chain aspect. What we are seeing in overall margin is really the switch in the product mix, and that's that we're selling more base malt that sells at a lower margin than the specialty malt. So that's the negative component for us, is really on that product mix. If we can get, again, more relaxation and more on-premise consumption, then we think that mix will go back to basically the same levels that we had pre-COVID. So we don't think there's any destruction, long-term destruction of demand or change in consumer preference. But nevertheless, the on-premise is more important to craft, and that's where the specialty malts are consumed, and that's at a better margin.
Yeah, and so a lot of that is, or at least part of it, is due to, you know, that your good locations, the more general market maybe, is that what you're implying? It may be experiencing potentially more weakness, but your plants are generally pretty advantaged.
Yeah, we're just in nice locations. So from a supply chain cost, transportation cost, we're sitting in nice locations.
Yeah, okay, terrific. And the second question is, so you've got something like 11 or 12 malt plants around the world. You've had the Scottish expansions, and you've had the Perth CapEx as well. I mean, when you look at the rest of your fleet, are you seeing much out there sort of either requiring significant refurb or warranting a major upgrade, or are we sort of done after this current round?
No, we think there's more places for us to look at it. Again, there's been a shift in demographics where populations are, and so it can warrant some increase in capacity in certain areas. And we keep looking at what the technology is and where we have some advantages from energy and water that can make a difference for us as well in terms of where our overall cost is. So this is a big component of strategy for us that we're working through with the board.
So that sounds like you're sort of saying there are certain locations where you've got a good advantage and you may as well press home that advantage. Are any of those plants that you're referring, the other plants we're referring to, are any of them in need of, you know, a significant refurb, or are they, you know, is the quality generally up to speed?
Yeah, there's different, each plant is different, different age to it or different technology to it. So we'll keep looking for those vantage points. But that was one of the main reasons that we're doing the Scottish expansion. So it was a combination of, it was a good growth market, and we're also dealing with some pretty old assets. And so it made good sense for us to actually take advantage of both of those. And we'll be looking at it site by site, location by location, but then tied in with what we see, what we think is a long-term growth in the markets in those regions.
Terrific. Thanks very much for that, guys, and well done again.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Snape from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple of house cleaning questions around the numbers, if I can. Just looking at some of the historicals, in particular the EBITDA for 2019. I'm having a look at the numbers you've put in the presentations today and what was in the original demerger documents that we put out. And there's been about a $9 million uplift in that baseline earnings number. I'm just trying to figure out what's driven that.
With the difference with the scheme document, there were pro forma numbers that were in there. And so when we look to what our final numbers are or our statutory numbers, what is contained within the results are what they are. So what had been previously put into the scheme document was to try to be able to represent what a possible comparative would be based on the assumptions at the time as we were looking to see what the spend would be on a go-forward basis and having comparatives on a normalized perspective in retrospect.
So the cost structure is lower than what it was expected to be as a standalone entity by about $9 million. Is that the way I should think about it? I'm doing this at pre-call, so I was just looking at processing and distribution. If I had those two divisions together, there's about an $8.8 million difference in the tire. I'm just trying to figure out if there's like a, if it's, you know, as you've gone back and looked at it, the cost structure or something's like $9 million lower than we thought it was going to be.
I'll have to look back to where you are referring in order to be able to get a response to you, but Renee and I can get back to you on that.
Okay. And look, can I just, it's nothing too serious. For the intersegment revenue, I think at the half it was like $54 million, and for the full year it's come in at $29. So I'm just wondering what the difference is there.
So much of that is having to do with we were actually running ahead of the COVID-19 levels, running better than the 2019 first half in 2020. And we were significantly impacted by the volumes and the product mix in the second half, along with bringing on additional corporate costs. And then the final factor would be also that change in the FX rates for our foreign currency revenue that is lower due to the weakening of the GBP and USD against the Aussie dollar.
So I'm just trying to, the intersegment revenue in the first half was a $54 million number, and for the full year it's 29, which implies that there's a $24 million positive number in the second half. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, is the first half number, is that a, I don't know, is that a typo or something? Because I'm assuming that's product processing through distribution or something like that.
So the only intersegment that we do is between our processing to our warehouse and distribution, and that was at a lower amount as we were in the second half because not only was there lower processing volumes, but there were also lower volumes on our warehouse and distribution side, as we had a much stronger negative impact due to COVID with the volumes on the warehouse and distribution segment. So in order to control the volumes on our warehouse and distribution side, we would have sold less out of our production side of the business.
Yeah, but it would have gone from a negative to a positive. I guess that's what I'm struggling with. The full year number is 29, the half year number is 54, which means that there must have been like a $25 million give back. So I don't know if you could come back to me on where that difference is. That would be great.
Yes, we certainly will.
Okay.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Adam Fleck from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks very much. I appreciate the time. I had a couple of big picture questions, actually, thinking about, I guess, the near term, but also longer term. Mark, you had a point on slide 7 about this, but one thing we've obviously seen during the pandemic is continued exacerbation of the aluminum can shortages in the U.S. And given your prior comments and optimism that the craft brewers have gotten creative about how to reach consumers, how do you think a continued lack of availability or maybe higher costs for canning could impact recovery in that market?
It certainly could have an impact, and it had a disruption in the supply chains more in that May, June period. Two things have happened. One is the aluminum cans supply is starting to catch up, but as importantly is we're seeing a fair amount of bottles getting packed as well. So there's been kind of a reversion back because the demand is there, and even though the preference is can because it's more portable, we are seeing actually more bottling go on at the same time.
Okay, that's good to hear. Thanks. And then maybe just an update on your thoughts from the agricultural perspective. Obviously, U.S. and Canadian barley look like to be a decent year again this year, maybe particularly in Canada. Can you talk a bit about what that means as you look into fiscal 21?
Yeah, it's beneficial to us because one is the quality looks really good. And so from a production base, U.S. was both very good yield as well as good quality. In Canada, the weather cooperated this year, so even though we needed an extended harvest, we were able to get that in most areas. So we've got a good ample supply. Price of barley, however, has been going up. And that's really the impact from China, who is buying a lot more feed grains than what was forecast and a lot more than they bought last year. And the primary purchase of grains they're buying is corn. So what happens in Canada is, who's a big importer of corn out of the U.S., corn's priced itself out of that market. And so barley becomes the next feed grain of choice. So it's been pushing prices up, particularly in the western areas of Canada. So price of barley is higher, but supply of good malt quality is there. So we think from a processing aspect, we'll be actually in good shape.
That's really helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That is all we have time for today. I'll now hand back for closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I really appreciate the questions and you being on the call today, but I also appreciate our shareholders and their support that they've given us. I just want to make comment on that I'm extremely pleased and very thankful in terms of what our employees have done, and I'm also very pleased in terms of our customers, in terms of how we've been able to work together getting through COVID and really helping each other out as we've had to deal with all of the disruptions from marketplace to supply chain to even product itself. So it's been what could be a trying year, but it's extremely beneficial to us because we're seeing the resiliency in the marketplace, and we're just really pleased with that. And we feel really good about the future as we work our way out of this whole COVID situation. So thanks again, and look forward to talking with you in the future.
Thank you. That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.